Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
This is Politico Energy. I'm Josh Siegel. President Joe Biden wants to ensure a Democratic majority at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission through at least the middle of this decade. But his path to do that, especially in an election year, is very difficult. Biden nominated two Democrats and one Republican for what will soon be three FERC vacancies, and their confirmation hearings are coming up next week. As we know, getting a FERC nominee confirmed by the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee chaired by Joe Manchin, who's butted heads with the White House over commissioner picks, has never been easy. But FERC watchers say these battles will have even higher stakes than in the past, since the agency has significant influence over Biden's clean energy transition. So today, I chat with Politico's Catherine Morehouse about the upcoming fight for the three nominees and the politics they must navigate. It's Friday, March 15th.
So on the Democratic side, we have Judy Chang, who by many accounts has a long history of working across the aisle. Her most recent role was actually working under the Republican Governor Baker administration in Massachusetts. And I spoke with both Democrats and Republicans who thought she was great to work with and really knows her stuff, all of that. However, I also spoke with a lot of people who pointed out that her background and her long history of working to advance renewable energy and decarbonization efforts, including under the Baker administration, still really puts a target on her back from Republican lawmakers who have really taken to disliking other commissioners who have that kind of background in the past. The other more controversial pick is Lindsay See. See is the Solicitor General of West Virginia, and those of us who cover energy policy daily might immediately think of Senator Joe Manchin and coal when we think of West Virginia energy politics. And in this case, that's a pretty on-target reaction because See actually argued on behalf of West Virginia and other coal-heavy states in front of the Supreme Court in an effort to fight the Obama administration's clean power plan. That's West Virginia versus EPA. The West Virginia side won, as you might recall, and essentially curbed the EPA's reach on that rule. So you might imagine she's very well liked in Republican circles. They see her as something of a rising star, really smart attorney, really talented. But you could see why Democrats might be a little wary to confirm someone like See, given current EPA efforts to further limit power plant emissions.
Right. And See was the nominee offered by the Republicans, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then there's another nominee who you report isn't expected to have as much trouble compared to the other two. His name's David Rosner, longtime analyst at FERC, and he was actually detailed to the Senate Energy Committee more recently. So tell me more about him and why does he have an easier path, perhaps?
Yeah, Rosner is expected to be less controversial in part because he just has a much more limited public record of where he stands on some of these bigger picture issues. He's really just not seen as being very ideological and is really seen as kind of more of the typical FERC pick, you know, someone with real institutional knowledge. As you mentioned, he's a known quantity in the Senate as well because he's been detailed to the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. And folks think that that's actually in part why he got the go-ahead, because the staff and senators on that committee already know and like him. And we even saw that from Senator John Barrasso. He released a comment, you know, saying that Rosner has worked constructively with his staff. We haven't seen anything specific from Senator Manchin, but the word has kind of been for a while that this is the guy that Manchin really likes.
Interesting. And remind us again of all the important items on FERC's agenda right now that you've been tracking closely and how getting these nominees confirmed could shape their outcome, if at all.
Yeah, so FERC still has a very hefty agenda, as it has for several years now. It's working currently on a massive planning rule that is considered critical to basically planning for and bringing new wind and solar resources onto the grid. That's a transmission rule. And these nominees won't weigh in on that rule in particular, but, you know, they will be part of its implementation and any response to challenges that that rule faces. And there are other important transmission and power market items still on FERC's plate that, again, could be critical to the energy transition. The other piece of FERC that's really critical is they review and approve LNG pipeline and terminal applications. So all of these big liquefied natural gas projects that have gotten a ton of attention lately, that initial approval to begin construction starts at FERC. And FERC is independent, so it's not binded to an administration's agenda. But over the years, the agency has floated possibly adding additional reviews to its process, like what the climate impact of a new LNG facility will be, or how it could contribute to pollution in local regions that are already way overburdened by industrial facilities. So these are all really critical issues, and these new commissioners will just have a huge role in crafting the agency's direction here.
Got it. And we know confirming a FERC nominee, it's always been a difficult process, but this particular confirmation process, according to FERC watchers who you spoke with, is looking to be particularly difficult given the political element ahead of the election. So why are the stakes so high right now? And kind of what are the factors you think, or the incentives maybe weighing on Democrats and Republicans as they consider whether to approve these nominees or not?
Yeah, so I'll start why the stakes are so high for people who do business in front of FERC. The stakes there are really high because we know that Commissioner Allison Clements is leaving. Her term ends in June. She could leave any time. If she leaves before these nominees are put in place, then all of a sudden you have a commission that is frozen, that can't do anything, doesn't have a quorum. So then to jump to the kind of political factors that Democrats and Republicans are weighing, Republicans, if they confirm these nominees, they're essentially allowing Biden to lock in a three-person majority for the foreseeable future, given that now Chairman Willie Phillips' term doesn't end until 2026. And then Democrats, you know, will kind of have to swallow a nominee who they, again, might not be super thrilled about. But what I've heard is, you know, they don't necessarily want to come out too hard against C because, again, then they might risk losing this majority. And then there are kind of external factors as well. You know, Democrats care, again, a lot about bringing on more clean energy resources. These nominees could have a big impact there. Republicans want to see fossil fuel LNG facilities moving faster, just kind of painting a broad brush. And these nominees would be critical to that effort. So I think we'll see that conversation be very present in the confirmation process as it plays out next week and beyond next week.
Also, the first major offshore wind project in the United States, South Fork Wind, has completed construction and is delivering power to New York, a major achievement for an industry that's faced turbulence over the past year. The offshore wind portfolios of Northeast states underpin President Joe Biden's climate goals, but they've suffered several cancellations as developers readjust to higher costs driven by supply chain issues, inflation, and higher interest rates. New York and other state officials have sought to reset and reframe the conversation, making new awards, and celebrating progress on under-construction projects. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch, and subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show is composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Norman Malaikel is the podcast producer. Annie Reese edited the podcast this week. Our editors are Matt Daly and Gloria Gonzalez. And that's our show. I'm Josh Siegel, and we'll see you back on Monday.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.